WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. In an effort to tamp down the trade war with Europe, President Trump is right now meeting with the European Commission chief in Scotland.
We look forward to talking to see if we can do something. We've had a very good relationship over the years, but it's been a very one-sided transaction, very unfair to the United States.
The BBC's Will Vernon.
If a deal is done, it would be absolutely huge. The EU is a gigantic trading bloc. The US is its biggest trading partner. And Donald Trump has threatened to slap 30% levies on all EU goods from August the 1st. But if a deal is done before then it is understood that the tariffs could be more like 15%.
Overseas. An aid drop in Gaza, where the threat of starvation is widespread. Linda Gradstein reports.
Jordan and the United Arab Emirates said they had dropped 25 tons of food and basic necessities into northern Gaza for the first time in months. Israel also airdropped aid into Gaza Saturday night and said it would stop fighting in certain parts of Gaza for 10 hours each day to allow more aid in. Airdrops have been criticized by humanitarian organizations as expensive, inefficient, and dangerous.
A House committee is looking into the investigation of Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking crimes. It's working to subpoena the Justice Department for files in the case, and it wants to depose Epstein's accomplice, Ghislaine Maxwell. Authorities in Michigan say a stabbing at a Walmart in Traverse City appears to have been random. 11 people injured, one man in custody. More than 130 million Americans are under heat watches and advisories today. Meteorologist Brian Hurley is monitoring.
In the southeast in particular, mid-Atlantic southeast, temperatures are going to be near 100, if not maybe a couple degrees above the century mark.
The class of 2025 is being inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
More than 25,000 people are expected to be on hand when five new members are enshrined, including outfielder Ichiro Suzuki, reliever Billy Wagner, and starter CeCe Sabathia, who says it's a dream come true.
Just even to go in the Hall of Fame in general, is a big honor. But to go in first ballot, I know what that means as a baseball player, and it's super exciting.
Sabathia, courtesy of MLB TV, Suzuki is also a first ballot Hall of Famer and the first ever Japanese-born player to be enshrined in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Erica Herskowitz for CBS News.
Hall of Fame elections date back to 1936. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. A new report from AARP says one in five people in Wisconsin are unpaid caregivers. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
Roughly 580,000 Wisconsinites and 63 million Americans provide ongoing care to adults or children with medical conditions or disabilities, and a new report says that's a 45% increase since 2015. Experts call the jump paired with a lack of resources an escalating national crisis. The new AARP report shows the average caregiver spends 27 hours per week on caregiving tasks. AARP's CEO Maisha Minter-Jordan notes that caregiving can impact a person's finances as well as their physical and mental health.
We need systems that see caregivers, value them, and support them because they are not just helping families, they are holding up our entire healthcare system.
Minter-Jordan says AARP is advocating for a national paid family and medical leave policy, workplace protections for caregivers, federal tax credits, and access to respite care, training, and support services. The report shows just 11% of caregivers have been trained for basic tasks, and yet National Alliance for Caregiving CEO Jason Resendez says he's seeing unprecedented complexity in caregiving.
Beyond daily care, over half of family caregivers, that's more than 30 million Americans, are performing complex medical and nursing tasks that once primarily took place in clinics and hospitals.
He says just over 1 in 5 caretakers who administer injections, manage catheters, and use other medical equipment have received training to do so. Some resources for caregivers can be found online at aarp.org/caregiving. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Low clouds and fog giving way to a mostly sunny sky. Highs in the mid and upper 80s, but the heat index, though, in the low to mid 90s. A light southeast breeze. Overnight, mostly clear skies. Lows in the lower 70s. A few storms on Monday and warmer. It's 87 at our studios.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Ben Giles, founder of Laughable Productions and the funniest person in Oshkosh contest. Then, If Walls Could Talk host and podcaster Mike Siegel joins the show.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba, weeknights 6 till 8.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, 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 my friends. Holy cow, you got another week. We are on the Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. I'm your host, Mark Becker, and this is exciting. So sometimes in our show, we kind of go outside the lines a little bit, and this is definitely going to be one of those times. If you remember, you know, I think it was last year, one of my favorite episodes was when we had the voice of my childhood, Paul Page. He was the guy that like is the announcer for IndyCar, and he joined us, and we talked all about Indy 500 and all that stuff. So that was awesome. And so we're going to go outside the lines a little bit. I am also in business in my real life. So this is a guy who is a very accomplished businessman. But he also does a ton for the community. So we're going to talk about both of those things. And so I have the 2014 Grocer of the Year. Yes, that's correct. The festival guy, the real festival guy, Mark Scogan. What's up, man?
Hey, how you doing? Good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you. How I appreciate you taking your time out, to do this.
You bet.
You got married?
I got married December 7th, so yes.
That's, yes.
Hot off the press.
Hot off the press, yes. You'll never win a round of golf with your partner in your life?
No. She's good. Well, depends on what tee we put her at.
So. I was going to ask you that. What tees do you play?
She could play my tees, but she enjoys playing up at the front tees now.
Okay.
And that's what events are at our club, too, so she enjoys that.
So Mark Scogan's wife is a retired. She's retired?
Yeah.
Professional golfer, so...
Yeah. Yeah, she's fun to play with. You know, I've played with people who don't play on any tour anymore, and they can be pretty intense and pretty frustrated with how they play because they're not at the top anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And she doesn't do that, so it makes it fun.
Does she ever give you tips?
Like you're pushing on the swing. A little bit, but that's another good thing, not, you know, saying do this, do that, and I can't do it and get mad at me because I've had that happen before, and it's like, well, if I could do it, I'd do it, but I can't.
I would be so competitive, and like you'd be sitting down to dinner or something after, like, hey, remember on 7? Did you like that?
Yeah.
How about that shot? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So, yeah, congratulations on all of that. I want to talk about, you know, this segment's for me because, you know, as a business person, it's always, I'm always someone that wants to grow and to learn and to kind of be learning from people who have been there and done that and had success. And I think, what you've done in your time as CEO of Festival Foods has been remarkable. I mean, you took over in what,
06, I believe it was, yeah.
And you guys have just exploded in terms of growth. Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, we've had a good run. You know, it's not easy to put up a grocery store. There's a lot of things that go into it, and you can't just put them wherever you want. You know, you need to be able to see. You know, in the past, we'd get projections from people who did it for their career on what they think you could do for sales volume in a new store, and so often they were wrong. Either
Oh, really?
They were wrong in a way that hurt us or in a way that, geez, we did way better here. So we stopped doing that and just kind of do it by gut a little bit more on where we think we can put a store. But yeah, for a long time, we just really grew and it went well for us. And now, you know, that we've really rounded out the state in many ways, it's hard to find locations to build new stores. But it's been a great run and a lot of great people that made that happen for us.
Yeah, that's, you know, and it's you're also not just building new stores, you're buying stores, a lot of like the community.
Yeah, it's interesting. When my grandpa started back in 1946, I think there were 70 stores, my dad said, in the phone book, 70 grocery stores in small La Crosse, you know, so they were small stores. Everybody kind of had a small store. And our stores ended up, you know, over time being about 25,000 square feet. And they were, you know, what some would call a small mom and pop type store. Mm-hmm. And then this festival format came to us. It was owned by our wholesaler at the time. And so that was a big box format, you know? And so we had probably five Scogan's IGA stores, those smaller stores. And over time we got rid of them. We said, this isn't the way it's going to work. We can't grow the same way. We won't be competitive. So we get into this big box thing for, I don't know. Well, our first festival store was in 1990. So up until 3 years ago, we were just building these big stores. Yeah. And we realized that it's hard to find spots to put big stores. We started to look at these smaller stores again that are in communities where they might be the only store. And you hear a lot about how small cities maybe don't have a store or not a very good store. And so we felt it was a good thing to do, that we had an opportunity to buy these independent operators who might only have one store, and they just want to get out. And so we've stepped into some of those, and we call that our hometown grocers brand of our business. And often we just leave the name of what it was, like Super Ron's in Pulaski.
Hey, that's right.
Yeah, that we just leave the name on there. You know, it upsets less things. You know, people expect something from that store that they've always gotten, and we like to stay that way.
Chicken? So.
Yeah, the chicken.
That's right. Yeah, that was one of my questions. It's like, what is your most accomplished, or what was your proudest accomplishment in business, and why is it buying Super Ron's?
Yeah, right. I was just there yesterday. I don't, you know, it's hard that we have about 50 stores total, and it's hard to get around to see them, but I was just there yesterday, and I like how that store looks and operates. It's a fun store.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you grow up, and my wife worked at Super Ron's in the deli for a long time. And my grandpa lived in Luxembourg, and they had Stadola's IGA, and you know, and so like the grocery stores in these small towns, that's like the cornerstone of the community.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because that's how it really used to be when there were 70 stores in La Crosse. Everybody looked to their grocery store for their community, for their needs, for where you'd almost gather, you know, and see your friends. It was before social media and all that stuff. And they were really the cornerstone. And I think over time, a bigger store, bigger boxes, some of the publicly traded companies, they've become not that, you know, they're just out there getting your groceries, and they don't do things the same way as it used to be done, you know, in the 1950s, 60s, 70s. And so those small cities still have that feeling to them that the locals count on their store for things that maybe they don't, where you have choices of 10 stores in a city.
Oh, you probably know the numbers better than I do, but I you know, the biggest thing that we would hear in our community was, you know, the roasted chicken at Super Ron's is better than any restaurant you're going to find. And people love that stuff.
Yeah, you told me that.
And, I know,
And we dug into it, and yeah, it's really good. And I asked a while back, and I forget if we're trying to get that rolled out in other stores, because it is, it's different. It's very good.
So it is a different.
Yeah. I forget what they told me they were doing a little bit different, but.
Oh, that's cool. And so, and it's funny, the former owner, the one that you bought from, is my neighbor. Oh, and so, you know, our kids play together and all that stuff. So yeah, that's cool. And it's when I was in high school, I worked in the Cops Food Center. Produce department, and we hated festival because every time you go in there, everything's bright, everyone's so friendly, you know. That's our festival.
There was a good family there too that did a really nice job for a very long time, and then just stepped away.
How do you like? What are your principles in terms of like business wise, in terms of like good people and places and all of that? What are your guiding?
Well, quite often we say we're in the people business. We just happen to sell food, so we focus more on people and community and being something more than a grocery store. And we do that because we want to be different. You know, if everybody's the same, you know, how are you going to get people to come to you? And we like to think that we have better people that are willing to help in ways that maybe they might not feel at another grocery store, any retail place, a hotel, a restaurant. It doesn't matter. And if we're not winning at that and doing that better than others, that's our sort of secret sauce that we want to make sure that we're doing very well.
Oh, I have a friend that works for you, and he's worked for you for a long time, Andrew. And he, I don't know what his position is.
Robbins.
Yes. I'm name dropping him.
He's in our office now doing, I forget what his exact title is, but yeah, talk about a happy, friendly guy.
It is, right. And it's so interesting because, like, you know, as an employer too, as we were talking with the CEO of Festival Foods, Mark Scogan, as an employer, I want people like that guy. Yes. I want someone that, you know, when he takes off the festival jersey and goes out about in his regular life, he still holds that same values of, you know, kindness and generosity and you know, someone you can be proud of. Like, that's my guy.
Yeah. We actually in the stores recognize associates when they have a positive comment about them. We get people call, stop a manager, write us.
Oh, cool.
And we keep track of how many they get. And on their name tag, we put a boomerang on there.
Oh, yeah.
And for, you know, 5, they have a certain color boomerang. 20, they have a certain color boomerang on their name tag.
That's really cool.
Highlighting the people who go out of their way to do something special for our guests.
That's cool. What, in your time and tenure, what has been some things that, have you ever been to a point where you're like, oh God, I don't know how we're going to do this?
Yeah. You know, and I've been asked before, what's, you know, the biggest failure you had in business and what did you learn from it? And it's like, I know there's plenty, but I think the thing I learned from that question is we don't dwell on them. We don't sit there and think, boy, we really screwed that up. You know, they just become in the rearview mirror and you forget about it. So
I don't think there's really you can't fail if you learn from it.
Yeah. Maybe one thing I'd think of, you know, that we said, oh, my gosh, is when Walmart started to get into the food business.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember they built their first store around Green Bay in right next to our store in West Mason Street. And our store was growing like crazy. They opened and nothing really happened, you know.
Really?
I've said at times that it's better to have that competitor right next to you than a mile away, you know, because maybe they're shopping both or, but that store just continued to do very well for us. And so we've, you know, dealt with them for a very long time. We know what they are. They're different than us, and that's good. They're not, you know, trying to do the same things we do, because then, you know, who's doing that better?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's, yeah, have them right there. We'll prove why we're different.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, what was COVID like?
I mean, it's hard to believe how long ago it was. Now,
I know.
But, it was pretty cool in one regard, in that our team stepped up. I would bet we had, you know, 250 people out of 7,000 that said, I shouldn't be working. I don't want to work. This doesn't feel safe. The rest stayed. And it became so busy. And, you know, so you got two things you're dealing with. What is this? Are we in danger? And then number two was just how busy we were and to keep up. And they just put their foot on the gas. And we were very proud of that time. You know, supply, yeah, that was a problem. Toilet paper was the first part of it. But, you know, if you think about United States grocery stores, they have so much stuff. Yeah, we might run out of one kind of ketchup, but there's, you know, 10 other brands sitting right there. So it never became, other than toilet paper, where it's like, can we even get that?
Yeah, I remember I owned a restaurant. This was like way at the end of the pandemic, and it just, supply chain was horrific, and you didn't know. You can make your order, but you have no idea when that truck comes, what's on it. It's like you're rolling the dice, and it's not Christmas, because you look forward to that, but then it's just, oh my God, is it coming? It's not.
Interestingly, as it relates to supply and a problem. Our wholesaler just had a cyber hack.
Really?
Started about a month ago, I would say, and lasted a couple of weeks of trouble. But that in some ways was almost worse than the pandemic for getting supply. They were out of, you know, they couldn't send anything, right. And they had no systems.
We're going to pick this up here after the break. We're talking to Mark Scogan here on the Rational Revolution on Civic Media Radio Network. Stick around.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported last fall that Maine voters approved ballot question 1, limiting contributions to super PACs spending money in state elections. It passed with massive voter support, but like the state's foreign influence ban, was ruled as likely unconstitutional. That's what organizers hoped would happen. The ballot question reads, do you want to set a $5,000 limit for giving to political action committees that spend money independently to support or defeat candidates for office? The act also required super PAC donors to be disclosed. A First Circuit Federal District Court ruled July 15th that both provisions violated free speech protections and pointed to the Citizens United, Buckley v. Valeo, and other past U.S. Supreme Court decisions. Harvard Law professor Lawrence Lessig argues that large contributions to PACs risk quid pro quo corruption of supported candidates, even if a candidate isn't directly speaking with the super PAC. Elon Musk's America PAC and crypto industry super PAC's support of Donald Trump are recent examples. Lessig said in 2023, when the initiative was announced, that it was designed to force the U.S. Supreme Court to answer whether contributions to super PACs can be regulated by states in the same way state candidate contributions are limited. The case will next be appealed in the First Circuit, then could reach the U.S. Supreme Court in late 2026. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt Nair on air.
Corrine Hendrickson, you mentioned a conversation with Ron Johnson, Corrine, about the need for child care in Wisconsin. How did that go?
I said, why don't you think we should fund? And he goes, I think an elegant solution, it would be for moms like you to stay home so the other moms can go to work. And I said, well, and I shouldn't get paid for that? And he just kind of stared at us. And I said, that tells me all I need to know.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses for free. Find a mentor today at score.org.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, if you like this episode, which, why wouldn't you, download these episodes. Everything is available on civicmedia.us. Download the app, like, share, subscribe, all that crap. Because, hey, this is pretty cool because, you know, the show is statewide and so is Festival Foods. Holy crap, we've got Mark Scogan back. What's up?
You were hanging out.
Yeah, right. You were talking on the other side about a cyber attack. And that's kind of been in the news a little bit. We've had that happen to our friends at Cellcom. I can't imagine like how horribly that would suck. What do you do in that case when your big supplier's like, sorry, bro?
Yeah, it was weird. You know, you hear about the cyber attacks and you just never thought that if it happened to your wholesaler, you were gonna not be able to get product. That one didn't cross my mind. You didn't hear about banks and everything else and what right. that does, but so when that happened, yeah, we went into scramble mode, asked another couple of wholesalers around the area, the state, that if they could help, and one stepped up, and so they were sending us product, but to order it, you know, is you have to get different guns to be able to order their product, and then what is their cost compared to what we're getting the product at, and how do you price it? And I mean, it's a hornet's nest. So, and then our usual wholesaler was sending us product manually, and we're ordering it from the other wholesaler. So now we're doubling up things, and you know, just being in scramble mode to not run out of product was a real pain.
I just, you know, how many SKUs do you have at its store?
There's got to be 35,000.
So, you know, it's like, how do you go through all 35,000? Like, you know, not that the wholesaler would, but it's like, hey, we're gonna rake them over the coals on pizza. Right. You know, like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was
trying to keep all of that.
Quite the experience.
Oh my gosh. I want to kind of go back to something that you said about being the cornerstone of a community and how everyone kind of gathered around the grocery store. And I, like, there are so many times and so many different things that we grew up watching the Shopko fireworks, you know, and that went away. And you guys stepped in and you filled a void there. You filled a void with the marathon. Like, talk about that. Like, that is something, that's kind of the reason I really wanted to talk to you is the giving back to the community. Like, you guys live that.
Yeah. It's one of our five values. And, you know, I just grew up that way. Grew up with my grandpa he passed away when I was six, so I didn't know him very well. But he started things, and then my dad carried on with the community side of things. And the story I like to tell about, you know, really how it looked back then. You know, if you charged groceries, they wrote it on a slip of paper, like a three-ply piece of paper, and they put it in a file box. And you just pay at the end of the month or whatever. And my grandpa, you know, being a very good guy and wanting to help people out, would from time to time just rip up somebody's charge slip and forgive it. Maybe they lost a job, lost a spouse, whatever the case was, he'd throw it away. So somebody told me that story one time, and it was more like, it came up in a way that was different than the second time I heard it. Somebody came up and said, you know, I knew your grandpa. He was a great man. This one time somebody was down on their luck and he just went to the file box and threw away their charge slip. Wow. And I thought, okay, this is real. This wasn't made up. Two people have told me now. And so that was just the mindset. And then just growing up, you know, as it relates to fireworks, you know, back many years ago, cities and communities had it in government that they could pay for it, you know, and that started to go away. You know, they just didn't do that anymore. And so all of a sudden now we don't have fireworks, and we didn't think that was right. So we like to step up. It's fun. It's family. Yeah. It's free. And those are the reasons we like to do that. And, you know, it's a celebration. It's a really cool time.
It's got to make you proud, though. You know, because you get to, you know, like my business is probably like one half of 1% of a fraction of what Festival is. But to be able to get to a point where you can do stuff like that.
Yeah, it's really nice. It, my dad has always said, you know, we're able to do it, so we should do it. And I was a chair for United Way campaign around here. Yeah. And so part of the job was to go out to businesses and say, hey, would you contribute? Can you be a part of this? And it was a real eye-opener for me, because some places you went, you could just tell there was no thought of doing that. They wouldn't have the way to reach their people because it wasn't a value. It wasn't something that they cared about. And when I say that, I'm not saying that's wrong or that's a bad business, but you just saw that it wasn't there. They couldn't reach their people to say, hey, let's give. And I just grew up in it that way. Yeah. That's just what we did. Our people give in a big way to the United Way. Even if it's a small amount, it adds up when you have that many associates working with you. So stuff like that. And you're teaching those 16-year-olds their first job.
Yeah.
Even though you're given 50 cents a paycheck, that's something. It's a habit to get into. And we like that feeling as well.
What does the United Way do here in the community?
Well, I think the way I describe it is they assess the needs of a community, whether it's hunger, homelessness, and they know, you know, year to year what's trending in the wrong direction. And they kind of look at those, I don't know if it's 30 nonprofits around a community, and they look at them and say, all right, homelessness is getting out of control. We're going to fund more of our money that is given to the United Way into those homeless shelters or food pantries or whatever the case may be. So, you know, it gets asked at times with our people, well, I like the Boys and Girls Club. I just want to give to them. And that's fine. That's right. What the United Way can do is really assess the bigger picture on what's the biggest need in the community this year and kind of divvy it out that way.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. You grew up knowing that. You grew up in?
Onalaska.
Onalaska.
Mm-hmm.
What, De Pere's home base, Ledgeview.
Yeah.
What brought you there?
There was a store, the festival store that was here on West Mason was owned by somebody else, and it wasn't doing well. It was going to go out of business, and the wholesaler at that time said, hey, you want to step in here? Because this isn't going to work with the people that are running it now. So we first we did that in Marshfield.
Okay.
It wasn't a festival there. It was a different store, and we stepped in, turned it around a couple of years. We're doing well. Same opportunity here, and just stepped in. So that's how we got to this side of the state.
Oh, that's awesome. Boy, that segment went really fast. We got Mark Skogan here on the Rational Revolution. We're going to talk rockers. We're going to talk music. We're going to talk all sorts of stuff when we come back. We'll be back right after this.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
CBS News Brief. With U.S. tariffs set to hit European imports August 1st, President Trump is meeting with European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen in Scotland.
I think the chances are, yeah, I think Ursula would say probably 50-50 of making a deal. I hope, you know, I'd like to make a deal.
Word just now, he's made a deal. Details to come. Israel is pausing military action in parts of Gaza to allow more food relief in. Aid worker Rachel Cummings is at a clinic there. She tells ABC's This Week.
Every child in the health center today was malnourished, but also every adult was extremely thin, gaunt-looking.
More than 130 million Americans under heat watches and advisories. This woman at a cooling center in Charlottesville.
The heat can be so dangerous, honestly. I think it's really important to have those cooling centers open, especially for people who don't have ready access to AC.
CBS News Brief, I'm Heather Bosch.
Walking for Love. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from training camp in Green Bay. With the Packers holding practice in hot and humid conditions, Rasheed Walker's 25 years old now, 6'6", 324 pounds, and at left tackle, he's assigned to protect the blind side of quarterback Jordan Love. The Packers have added some players to the line, including the 49ers' Aaron Banks, who'll play left guard. I asked Walker how he sees things playing out this season.
Been playing for 4 years. Right guard, we got depth at the right guard spot. We got Elton Jenkins. We got Banks, you got me, so I mean, I feel like everybody, if we, you know, uphold the standard and, you know, play to, you know, how we know we should play, I feel like we got a Super Bowl team. We know we got a playoff team, but I feel like we got the potential to go all the way to the Super Bowl.
Baseball. Brewers host the Marlins today, then they host the Cubs tomorrow night. The Crew losing 7-4 last night to Miami. It was Milwaukee's first series loss since July 2nd when they lost 2 out of 3 to the Mets in New York. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. As far as episodic TV goes, nothing gets me more excited than a well-done cop show. There have been 2 spinoffs so far from the Amazon Prime cop show, Bosch, a show about a stubborn, uncompromising police detective played by Titus Welliver. In a new cop show, Welliver heads up the cast in Westies. According to Collider, Welliver plays Glenn Keenan, a Vietnam vet and gritty beat cop. The story is set in the early 80s in Hell's Kitchen in New York and follows the Westies, a real-life Irish street gang, as they try to carve out a piece of the action despite being a much smaller force than the Mafia's 5 families of New York. Welliver calls his character deeply corrupt and very dark, but also nuanced. Joining him in the cast are J.K. Simmons, Tom Brittany, Jessica Francis Duke, and just added additions Sarah Bulger and Stanley Morgan. The Westies will drop on MGM Plus sometime in 2026. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Waba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Low clouds and fog giving way to a mostly sunny sky. Highs in the mid and upper 80s, but the heat index, though, in the low to mid 90s. A light southeast breeze. Overnight, mostly clear skies. Lows in the lower 70s. A few storms on Monday and warmer. It's 87 at our studios.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
All of these things should sound off alarm bells bigly. You see what Donald Trump's doing with Harvard and with Columbia. You see what he's doing with Paramount. ABC capitulated in a lawsuit to Trump. We're America. We're not Hungary. We're a democracy. We're always going to be a democracy. Yeah, that's what they thought in Hungary. The way that Viktor Orban and the right wing gained power was by using a little bit of power to get more power, to use pressure on networks.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll take a look back at the Wisconsin News headlines for the weekend, who may be in the running for governor next, and previewing our Tuesday show with Joe Thomas. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Mark Becker. We are talking with Festival Food CEO Mark Scogan. So we were talking all the stuff that you did, and we kind of started getting into giving back. And one day, so I when I was growing up in the local political field, I got to know one Jeffrey Royal very, very well. And I became pretty good friends with him. And when he was trying to get the new stadium and do some of that stuff, I worked with him and got to become friends with him. And sadly, he's no longer with us, but he was a pioneer in local baseball. And you now are the proud owner of the former Green Bay Bullfrogs, now Green Bay Rockers. You get a sweet stadium.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Yeah, that's another weird one. We were sponsoring teams in that league.
Which is a great league.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah,
one of the owners, the guys who own Madison right now, owned Kenosha, and I forget the other. They owned here in Green Bay and two more, I think. And they just called me out of the blue because we knew them from the sponsorship that they wanted to sell, and they had a buyer, but there was going to be a few people, and some of them weren't from Wisconsin, and they thought, you know, we need somebody from Wisconsin. That would be better. And so they just called me out of the blue. And I thought, wow, that's cool. I love baseball. And that I hadn't ever thought of it before. And so it just went from there, and very happy to have made that decision.
Do you go to a lot of the games?
Yeah, every time I'm in town, I will be there. Yes.
Oh,
last
really?
Night it got rained out, which probably shouldn't have. We have turf. And
oh, yeah.
They read the weather report wrong after the big storm came through. But oh, well. I go all the time.
Yeah, the Midwest League, and I know, you know, the radio show stretches across the state. So there's, you know, the Mallards and the Kenosha
Kingfish.
Yeah. And it is, you know, here in Green Bay, it's the Green Bay Rockers. And we're going to talk about why that is in a little bit. But it's such a fun league to go to. It's inexpensive. It's something that all families can really enjoy. You're right there with the players. It's a cool experience.
Yeah. It's, college age players who in the summer want to continue to train, and they use wood bats, which is something they don't do in college. So it gets them used to that for hopefully getting drafted at some point. So the league will release basically weekly a player who is called up to the major leagues for the first time. And so you're looking at guys out there that somebody's going to make it. And,
yeah.
That's pretty fun.
And so in the theme of giving back, you're famously a fan of rock music and Green Bay Rockers, right?
Right.
And you kind of thought, hey, well, we need a venue to have some sweet shows. And talk about what you did with the Epic Event Center.
Yeah, so we were sponsoring shows at the Green Bay Distillery for maybe it was 5 years. And, you know, it could hold 900 people, which is okay, but would like to be larger. And also the problem there was that they rent their space out for weddings a lot or events, and that ends up on weekends. So those are prime dates to be able to put a concert in there. And so somebody might be touring and they say this date and nope, sorry, can't do it. There's a wedding. So we started to look for places we could do it on our own. I have a group of about five guys that likes to go to shows together, and we'd travel and we'd see different places, and we could see what was good and what wasn't good in those venues, whether it's for the band or the fans. And so we had the whole thing, a checklist of what we wanted to do. And in Green Bay, we looked at quite a few places, said this could work. And for whatever reason, it just never did. We sort of gave up on the idea and said, this just isn't working. I have a buddy then who owned the old Gordman's building. Oh. And Gardner's went bankrupt. He had an empty building. He said, what about this? And I said, whoa, this is great. Kind of empty box, you know, that we can start from scratch. Yeah. And so we went at it. And, you know, cities, larger cities have these venues that have 2,000 people capacity. And there's bands that, you know, tour regularly that play in those all the time. And this city just didn't have that, you know. Right. And so it was a fun thing to put together and get bands here. Quite often I'll look at the guys and be like, if not for us putting this together, that band would never be in Green yeah. Bay. And look at all these yeah. people having a blast. I mean, that's that gives me goosebumps. I love that.
Yeah, it, you know, I was when I was in high school and a couple of years after I was in a band, and that it you know, Milwaukee has like the Miramar Theater. You know, it's a smaller thing that you can get some decent people. But yeah, we didn't have that. And I think one of the things that is interesting about, or you know, definitely a feature of the Epic is what you guys do for the artists to make them want to come.
Yeah, we hear that quite a bit, that they love being there and that they want to come back, and it's the best stop that they have on their tour. And from green rooms that are nice and very yep. close to the stage, to the loading dock is so close to the back of the stage. We've got a workout room area for them. We've got a basketball court actually in there.
Oh, really?
That they can use.
Oh, sweet.
And the skate park next door to us isn't ours, but a lot of those guys like to skate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the perfect spot for them to stop off.
You have a show that's coming up, and I think it's like, because the band I was in, we did like punk music, you know, like Blink 182. Mm-hmm. You have some of the, I don't know if it's like Simple Plan or, you know, and some of those other ones.
Yeah, I forget. I get asked often, like,
yeah.
What's coming or what have you had, you know? And
yeah, it's like that's cool. But like, so, and I've never been to the Epic Event Center. I think that's going to be my first one. I got to check that out because I've heard so much about it. And everyone that goes to the shows raves about it. And I've seen the pictures and it looks remarkable.
Yeah, let me know when you want to go. I'll give you a little tour and
get
you
to
that. Good. We have a little elevated area side stage that we can watch from, or you can leave there and go out front too. But it's great.
I'll take you up on that.
Let me know.
And like all of these things, from the fireworks to, you know, you work with United Way to the marathon. What? How did that come up? By the way.
The company that actually runs those and other running events or athletic events in the state was running it for Cellcom.
Yep.
Cellcom's a title sponsor, and they're very involved, and we are as well, but people who really know how to put that stuff together. And so they knew that we always sponsored stuff. We have our turkey trot.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So,
oh, by the way,
they said, hey, yeah. You guys want to step in here for this because they're stepping away. And it was just good timing again. And you know, for that running community to not have a marathon in Green Bay, it just doesn't make sense, really.
Right. What point in your career, you know, you're looking at all these acquisitions and everything, at what point are you kind of like, okay, now I'm focused on that, but it does seem like you're really focused on giving back and community enrichments. And I mean, I know the stuff that you do here. I imagine that you do all those things at different communities too. Why do you do that?
We just think it's the right thing to do. I mean, we're supported by our community and those that shop our stores. So giving back in the communities, making a community a better place to live, to have fun, to, you know, grow up in. It feels good. I used to say this to our team all the time. I don't think anybody goes home after working in a grocery store for the day and saying, wow, that was awesome. I stocked, I scanned. That was, I feel really fulfilled, you know. But when you can say, I stand for something, I know this place that I do this work in because we're taking care of our guests, they're supporting us, we can give back and make our community better, that feels good.
Yeah, I think too, we touched on it a little bit, but during the time when COVID hit, like, I mean, I would imagine that during that time, a lot of your associates could feel that way, because they're on the front lines of keeping the communities going. And, you know, there's the police, there's the fire, but then they take care of all of the other needs, from feeding your kids to giving you, you know, all yeah, of that.
That really did highlight, you know, their value. You know, you kind of take it for granted that we have safe grocery stores with a lot of variety. And but when it's in jeopardy and people are not safe, you know, were there for them yet. And I think they did feel like heroes in that regard.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make me quite proud of my team.
Yeah, I really think they did, and they shined, and they gave it their all. And it was a interesting time, but when you have your back against the wall, they stepped up.
And let's never do that again.
Yeah. one and done.
Yeah, right. Good God. It's interesting. I'm going to talk with Raul Mendoza Ayala, who is a pulmonologist who was one of the big doctors here locally that was kind of trying to guide the community through it. Holy crap. We were just rehashing some of that. That really sucked.
Mm-hmm. You get removed from it, and you do forget how brutal it was.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah, it was crazy. What's next for Festival? What is, if you had a 10-year plan?
Yeah. Well, you know, we want to keep growing, and whether that's in current stores or additional stores that we can add to the group, we'll do that. But I think, you know, the path forward is changing faster than ever. Technology is wild with the things that we need to keep up on and the costs of those. And it often feels like it takes a couple years to get something put in place. And by the time that 2 years is up, it's the next thing, or that company you went with isn't the best anymore. And, you know, it's a gamble when you put money out there for some of those things. And then you realize that 2 years later, whoops, now we have to do it again or a different way.
Right, yeah, we're talking with Mark Scogan, CEO of Festival Foods. I that's a tough thing, you know, because in my business too, we have relationships, and to have to change something when you've built those relationships, that's not a...
Yeah, it's...
It's not easy.
It's very difficult. You know, look at how we have to market now. It used to be pretty darn simple when it was the newspaper.
Yeah,
just
right.
Just put an ad in the paper.
Right.
And Wisconsin and Green Bay in particular stuck to the newspaper longer than the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. And that goes away. And now how do you talk to people? How do you give them offers that are specific to them? When you put it in the newspaper, it was like, well, I don't drink soda. Well, you get to look at this ad anyway.
Right.
And now, you know, you have to be more targeted and send things that you know they're purchasing so that it's relevant.
So, and that's all, do you do that in-house? Do you have a company that?
We aren't where we need to be there yet, okay. But we're getting there. And again, that's that big process of vetting out companies that others use and figuring out what's going to be best for us.
But it's, you know, I think that there's a value in business to what you're doing in the community too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We get, you know, a lot of recognition in a positive way about stepping up in the community. And, you know, we don't do it for the recognition. That's a silly reason, but it's nice when it is recognized and people can see that we're trying.
Yeah. Well, when the void happens, it's Festival has been there like numerous times. In you know, beloved events that communities do need, from the fireworks to the that's cool, man. Like, seriously, that's awesome.
Yeah, we're proud.
Yeah, you should be. That's something that definitely you know, is a value to tens of thousands of people. So what's life for you like in the next couple of years?
Well, just you know, living it to its fullest. We know life is fragile. And,
golfing?
Yeah, trying to play a little bit of golf and go to my concerts and enjoy marriage. And
yeah.
We have a dog that consumes plenty
that's
of our time.
Yes.
Yeah, she's... I'm alone with her for a few days now, so that's... You know, you forget how tied down you are. You can't just leave for the day. You need to get home and let them out and feed them and... but yeah, she gives us a lot of joy.
That's awesome. Mark Scogan on the Rational Revolution. Y'all support, go to Festival. That's awesome. I can't thank you enough for your time and keep doing what you're doing. It means a lot to a lot of people. So
thank you.
Stick around on the Rational Revolution. You got my thoughts coming up next.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, Treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. After weeks of speculation, Governor Tony Evers has finally made his decision. He is not running for a third term. Evers has had an accomplished career as a dedicated public servant for 5 decades and has been a terrific governor for the state of Wisconsin these last 6+ years, and we should be grateful for his time in office. It's been a job well done. But all things must pass. In making this decision to step aside and not seek another term, Tony Evers is doing what he has done time and time again. He's doing the right thing. And perhaps in making this decision, Governor Evers can be the one to turn the tide on the Democratic Party's unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. In his own unassuming way, the mild-mannered former science teacher who became Wisconsin's governor can be an example to Democrats across the nation. Because we know what happens in Wisconsin politics often has ramifications that reach well beyond the state's borders.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
That sound? It's your recycling at work. And you can thank a Wisconsin woman for making it happen. Millie Zantow saw a waste sorting system in Japan during a trip in the 1970s. She came home to Prairie du Sac in Sauk County inspired. Her research led to the triangle-numbered plastic recycling system we still use today. So can you guess what percent of all the plastics produced in the United States ends up being recycled? 75%? 25%? Or 5%? The answer coming up. Zantow also helped with Wisconsin's recycling laws, along with the opening of one of the first collection centers. But now, are you surprised to learn the answer is just 5% of plastics are recycled? It's according to the group Beyond Plastic. Yet Zantow always believed you don't have to be perfect, you just have to start. There's a smart slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matt and Air on Air.
Kareen Hendrickson, you mentioned a conversation with Ron Johnson, Kareen, about the need for child care in Wisconsin. How did that go?
I said, why don't you think we should fund? And he goes, I think an elegant solution, it would be for moms like you to stay home so the other moms can go to work. And I said, well, and I shouldn't get paid for that? And he just kind of stared at us. And I said, that tells me all I need to know.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. You've got me, Mark Becker, and joining us was Mark Scogan. If you want to hear that again, please feel free to download the episode, available everywhere, wherever you get your podcasts. Go to civicmedia.us. All of the things. That is where we are. And I have to say, you know, I was going to talk about politics stuff and give my thoughts about what's going on, but I can't do that right now because I'm so appreciative of the conversation that we just had. And I hope if there's people out there that want to take a page out of someone's book, the page out of the book for Mark Scogan and Festival Foods is really one that is positive. I think that wherever they go, you know, be it putting up a new store in a community or purchasing a store that's in a local community, they're trying to do things the right way. They're trying to impact people's lives positively. And he said it when he was here. We talked about Super Runs, which, you know, I'm from Pulaski, and we just had our big polka days, it's a small town community that really has a lot of pride and rallies around that little grocery store. He's right. And
when Festival bought it, I mean, that sent a, I don't want to say a shockwave through, but it did. I mean, it was something that the community was surprised by. And so often, something small like, we're not going to change the chicken. You know, because, hey, if you want some good roasted chicken, you come to Pulaski, Wisconsin, you go to their deli and you order an 8-piece. And my God, you're going to be sent right to heaven because that stuff, it's so good and people love it. And of course, they're going to make some changes to the grocery store. You know, they talk about the deli and there's not fresh sliced, all this other kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, they also have to run a business. But they understand the value of community. They understand what that means to the people that live there and the people that shop at those stores. And I think from that standpoint, to community giving, to, you know, the outreach that they do and the outreach that he does. I totally forgot that he was he led the efforts in United Way locally. And like, that's incredible. You know, we here in Northeast Wisconsin, and everyone knows what Shopko is. And when they went out, I mean, they sponsored so many things. And there were huge voids in the community, from the Shopko fireworks and the Cellcom Green Bay Marathon when they stepped aside. And it was Festival Foods that filled that void. And as he said, not because they want the recognition, but just because it's the right thing to do. What a cool thing. What an amazing idea that is. I try to do that in the business that I have, is that's our guiding principle is, okay, what's the right thing to do? When you're faced with something that is, okay, this sucks. Well, what is the right thing to do? And obviously ours is a small business, but when he does it, it's in a big way. And if we can all, you know, he was walking out and we were talking about how the news is bad. It's not fun. It's not cool to hear what's happening out there and where people are nervous and people are scared. And this is, you know, there's so much turmoil. But if we have that guiding principle of let's just be good people, let's just do good things, I think that when we do that, all of those things compound. And my God, the world can be a pretty darn good place if we just have that that boomerang theory, you know? that's amazing. The boomerang theory, I believe, is you know, you do good things and it'll come right back. And, you know, from spreading goodness to treating people right to just doing the right thing out in public, that's what it's all about. And, you know, to put it in a little bit of a political sense, there's so much. And I bash on one side a lot because they're out there doing things that are not the right thing to do. But man, if we can just find it in ourselves to do that, so much of our world will be in so much of a better place. And I think that's a really cool thing. Festival Foods, great stuff for not a lot of money. I told my son, I'm going to talk to the festival guy, the real festival guy. And I was going to ask him, my tough question was going to be, great stuff for not a lot of money. Is that still true? I didn't even get to that. You know, it didn't even come up. And it's wonderful because it didn't have to. And, you know, to see the things that they've done and to talk about some of those experiences that he's had, that was really, really cool. And if you want, he started something called the Epic Event Center. We talked about that. It's a small venue concert hall in Green Bay, and they have really, really remarkable artists. They've had some big names at that show. At that venue, and I will go to one of those because it's definitely a pretty badass place to be. It's cool, and so yeah, check that out. The Green Bay Rockers, and it is a wonderful place to go. You know, Madison's got their team, and they start Kenosha, and it's the Midwest League, I believe, is what it's called. And yeah, it's a lot of appreciation here for Mark and for the team at Festival for doing what they do for our communities. Go and spread that kindness, spread love, and be good. That's what we need. So thank you so much to Mark Scogan. Thank you to Festival Foods, Civic Media. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to have these discussions. And we're going to see you next week. We're going to have a really, really interesting discussion with a doctor. We were talking about COVID, and we're going to talk about it one more time with Dr. Raul Mendoza Ayala from Civic Media.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch.
We've reached a deal. It's a good deal for everybody.
President Trump says he just made a trade agreement with the European Union.
We are agreeing that the tariff straight across for automobiles and everything else will be a straight across tariff of 15%.
This comes just days before the U.S. was going to impose a 30% tariff on European imports. The Israeli military is pausing fighting in parts of Gaza where Palestinians face starvation. Linda Gradstein reports.
The U.N. organization said a third of Gaza's population were not eating for days in a row. And the Palestinian Health Ministry said nearly 90 children have died of malnutrition since the war began. Israel has eased some restrictions, including announcing a tactical pause in military